This is CliffCentral.com.
You can count on us on a Thursday for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you by Nando's. It's our opportunity once a week to catch up on all the current affairs, the things that are happening in the world and the things that are happening here in South Africa that you need to know about. They might come up in conversation, and you'll need to have a quick answer, right, Pumi?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you can't be one of those people who goes, I don't really know anything about
this. Yeah, you're at the water cooler sounding very smart because you listen to us.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully
appropriate any sentence that we use.
Hopefully we impart something useful to you this morning, and we've got a lot to cover. We'll talk to Stevens Mukhalapa, who is the new executive mayor of Tshwane. We'll speak to him. He's been put in there because Solly is now running for premier of Gauteng. So we're going to have to find out whether that means that this is a, you know, if Stevens is a makeshift or if he's going to stay there. We're going to find out from him. And he has been in the studio before. And like Pumi said, it's election year, so people are going to show up. People are going to be interviewed.
Be there.
You know? Is he on the phone or on Skype, Sia?
He's on Skype.
Okay. All right. Let's get Stevens on. He is the DA's member for Tshwane, who's now been elected as the new executive mayor of the city. And he takes over running the city's administration from Solly Msimanga. According to Liberal International, he was born and bred in Tshwane, so he knows the place. He went to Motsekgomolo primary school, and he later matriculated at Mabopane High School. His alma mater is the University of Pretoria. He completed a degree in political science and began his honors degree in international relations. So this week he announced that the city's terminated the scandal-ridden GLAD Africa contract. We'll ask him about that too. And he said that contract was, this is always interesting, terminated by mutual agreement. We'll see what we can make of that.
Yeah, it means they've agreed not to sue them for the remainder of the contract.
Right. All right, so we'll talk to him. We're also going to find out about David Mabuza, who was questioned in Parliament. Sure, did he have a horrible Q&A in Parliament? He really showed himself to be completely incapable of dealing with just about any question. He was asked about the shortage of electricity and said it's a sign of growth, so we'll talk about that. And poor old Willis Mkunu has fainted. The KwaZulu-Natal Premier fainted at his State of the Province address. So loads of stuff to get to, but first things first, Stevens Mukhalapa, Mayor, good morning, how are you?
Good morning, Gareth. Good morning to you, and good morning to the listeners.
Very nice to talk to you. Congratulations first on your new role. The last time we spoke to you, you were very much a normal political party member, and you didn't have any necessary duties and responsibilities with respect to Tshwane. Now, thanks to Solly clearing out, you've had to come in and take over. Has he left things in order for you?
Well, Gareth, it's being a mixed bag. Remember, the whole struggle started in 2016 when we took over. We found a very broken city, and it's not an overnight fix that you can do. Suffice to say, at least there is money in the bank. Investment is coming our way. Our economy is doing good, but we can accelerate service delivery, which is my mandate, why I'm here in Tshwane.
So tell me about this GLAD Africa contract, which we heard was terminated. What happened there?
Well, the history is well known about the contract. I found it in the city, so my duty was to ensure that how do we extricate the city from this irregular contract, and that is what I decided. A week before I was announced as the candidate, I said one of the issues, an immediate issues that I'll deal with when I get to office will be the elephant in the room, which is the GLAD Africa contract. And in my true spirit of the promise, within a week I was in office, I cancelled the contract. So that is the long and short of it. And we want to move on from this saga and ensure that it never happens again and that I can focus on my mandate. I would have, appreciated if I get called by media and they ask me, what is your plan for Tshwane? But all I've been answering is Glad Africa. So I hope my statement of cancelling it will be the end of it, and today council will give me the authoritative mandate to move forward and cancel this contract.
Stevens, this is Pumi. How are you doing?
Hey, great and you?
Fab. So this is then your opportunity to tell us what it is that you will do for Tswane.
Mm. So go ahead. Let's hear your plans.
Look, Tswane is a capital city full with potential. What I would want to do basically firstly is to accelerate service delivery. I have already launched a program of accelerated service delivery on Monday in Region 5, which is the Cullinan area, and then Tuesday I was in Region 7, which is the Brokenspruit area. Tswane is divided into 7 regions, by the way, service delivery regions. There, what we were doing is to do basic service delivery programs like cutting of grass, marking of the roads, fixing of the street lights, ensuring that we collect litter and we clean the city, refuse removal. So that is the fundamental essence of what I want to do. And then secondly, what I want to do is economic development in ensuring that we unlock economic opportunities, building new economic opportunities. The reality of Tswane is that 55% of the population that live in the city live about 50 kilometers outside of the city. Region 1 being the biggest, Garankuwa, Mabopane, Winterveld, Soshanguve area, and Hammanskraal. So if we can revitalize the industrial nodes of Garankuwa, Babelegi, and the Roslyn node, then we can be able to start
what does that unlocking mean,
economic
Stevens,
opportunities.
So what does that mean?
Sorry?
For what does unlocking what economic is, opportunities mean in real terms? So for a person living in any
terms,
one of those places?
In real terms, what it means is that you've got a Babelegi industrial area. If we can revitalize that area, it means people in Hammanskraal will access jobs. They no longer have to travel 50 kilometers to town to access economic opportunities.
If we can revitalize the industrial node,
can be able to create jobs.
In places like Roslyn, I mean, that those are factories, and we know Roslyn was a major motor manufacturing area in Tswane for a long time, still is in some ways. Is that the kind of stuff you're talking about, attracting international and local business?
Foreign direct investment will be my main focus to ensure that we bring in investment. As we speak, we've got the 3.8 billion Waterloo project with Ford, where Ford will be extending their plant. So that will be creating around 1,600 jobs. And as you correctly say, Gareth, in the Roslyn note, we've got Nissan, Mercedes, and BMW there. What I would want to do is to make Vonerboom Airport a logistical hub, so that the parts of the cars in Roslyn, which is just at least 10 kilometers from Vonerboom, can be used as a logistical hub to give the motor industry their parts. At this point in time, they are getting their parts from Richards Bay, which is miles away from here. Mm. So it is essentially making sure that we unlock those economic opportunities that are closer to people so that they can have access to jobs.
And of course, then making transport a little bit more effective would help there as well.
Of course, we've got what we call the BRT, RENG, the Bus Rapid Transport System. Currently, it is just around the CBD to the Hatfield area, which covers the student population around Sunnyside, Pretoria CBD and Hatfield area. But we got to expand it so that it reaches the key townships in Tswane, so that it can finalize and finish the triangle from Soshanguve, Atteridgeville, and Mamelodi triangle. So we will be working to see how we can ensure that we unlock that infrastructure. And part of the problem in Tswane is the backlog of infrastructure. roads and stormwater infrastructure, particularly in Region 1. It's got old pipes that needs to be fixed and replaced, and we've started in Harangua area, and then we will be moving towards Soshanguve, Mabopane, Winterfeld area.
Stevens, and what does that look like in terms of time? You know, I think we have become very used to listening to plans and words like if we can unlock opportunities, but with no real timelines in place. So when you know, when you say if you can do something, it means to me that the probability of it not happening is just as high as the probability of it happening. So what are the timelines you are talking about?
That's a very good probable question. And, you know, I was saying to the senior staff that there's a lot of strategic planning and plans and everything. They are gathering dust. Now it's time for implementation. I will be known, my legacy will be known as the service delivery mayor. One thing that I found with local government is that it's highly regulated. For everything, little thing that you do, you must go on tender. And that is why people fight in local government, because there's lots of tenders that goes around here. But I think with me, I have made service delivery. That is why I'm talking service delivery. I'm not talking everything. I'm just saying let the city be able to do basic things that a municipality should be able to do. And once we do the basic service delivery things, then we are able to attract investment. People see, okay, this city has got electricity supply that is stable. They've got quality water that is accessible. They're making sure that they are cutting red tape when it comes to zoning and town planning applications. Those are the small things that business want to hear, that when they come and do business, their investment is well protected. So that is what I'm talking about when I'm saying unlocking those things, is to say, we've done talking, now we got to implement. And I appreciate the impatience of the people, and I understand, because of myself as a citizen and resident of Tshwane, was frustrated with the lackluster and slow pace of service delivery. And my mandate is to ensure that we accelerate service delivery.
So you haven't answered the question of timeline.
Well, timelines, it depends on what program you do. You know, I'm not a populist, so I cannot say I will fix the electricity tomorrow. I can't do that.
But you did say, Stevens, you did say just now.
What must be done?
You did say just now that you've started things like stormwater drains in Harangua. So, I mean, all of these things obviously have deadlines, right?
Yes, they do have deadlines. But remember, we are working even on a budget. So, for example, the budget of the of this current financial year ends now on the 30th of June. So it means we got to ensure that we finalize all the projects that we have. We've got a 4 billion capital budget, meaning that it deals with capital projects. So we got to ensure that we spend it for all those bulk infrastructure that needs to be put. We've got about 214 former settlements that needs services in terms of water, electricity. So we got to always make sure that we provide those. So within this current financial year, we should be able to do the targets that we have set in terms of service delivery.
Sure. When did you actually take office?
12th of February.
Oh, right. It's less than a month.
Just 2 weeks ago.
Right. I think
less than a month, exactly.
we can give you a moment or two to actually take in your surroundings. So what happens now?
Yeah, I think give me a call in a month again. let's evaluate the progress.
All right.
Stevens, I'm interested to know about, because we are in an election year, and part of what your job is within your party is obviously telling us what it is that the DA can do differently or better. So now that as you take office and you're not willing to share deadlines except for that you've got a budgetary deadline of the end of June, what is it that the DA can do differently or has done differently or will do differently going into this election that people can actually look forward to? Because everything that you've said up until now is exactly the same that we hear from all municipalities. It says we've got a capital expenditure budget, we've got a year end of so-and-so, we've got to accelerate service delivery, and we have to work within a particular framework. So what is it that is different that you can do?
For me, it's action and implementation. And it's only 10 days that I've been in office. I said that, okay, we've got a problem with this irregular contract of Let Africa. Within 5 days coming into office, I cancelled it. Mm-hmm. So if that is not action, then sure. I don't know what action. So that is what I've done. And then I walked in into office and said, let us do the basic things that the municipality should be able to do. Now, as I can tell you, if you drive around Pretoria, you can see that the grass is cut. You can see that the street lights are functioning. You can see that there are road markings. So those are the things that in 10 days. They are now moving.
Why was Solly not doing that
before?
They are
now moving.
Why were they not moving? Because Solly was there before. And he's part of the DA.
I would not. That one, I'm sure that you've got his numbers. You can get him there. He's a premier candidate. Surely he would want to speak to you. He'll be the one to speak for himself. I'm speaking for myself now.
All right. Well, Stevens, listen, good luck. We will check in with you again and we'll find out how the capital city's doing after a couple more months of you in office. But for your first 10 days, there's already a menu of things we can look at. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Karas, and right. I will look forward to that engagement.
You're not thanking me?
Thank Pumi, otherwise she's going to be very hurt.
Thank you to Pumi for your probable question.
All right, thank you very much. Thanks, Stevens. Bye-bye. All right, there he is, Stevens Mokgalapa, who's just taken over as the mayor of Tshwane. So, our deputy president said a shortage of electricity in the country might be a challenge, but it's also a sign of a growing economy.
Why are you side-eyeing me?
I'm trying to see whether you maybe can find any reason to explain that this might be sensible, because I felt sorry for him. I watched a little bit of his Q&A, and I felt like this was genuinely a situation where there was a man out of his depth put in front of an audience that really wanted the EFF and DA in particular to launch an attack on him. And I didn't see the ANC really jumping at his defense either, because I don't think a lot of people in the ANC necessarily like him. He's a powerful man, and he is the compromise candidate since our NASREC meeting, which with the ANC conference at NASREC, where he was elected as deputy president kind of as a means for Cyril to broker his own presidency.
You know, the thing that is quite, for me, disappointing is what you see standing up in front of us there, besides the fact that there are so many factions and so many ructions within the ANC, is you see the level of political immaturity, as it were, where people, there is a clear, or we think from the outside, and we are told quite often that there are party mandates, that there is a party line, that there is a structure and within and disciplined members.
And you think people are learning and kind of trying to perfect their craft and paying attention to things.
And that people are going to be able to at least have a party line and put that out there. Mm. But what you see is you see individuals stand up, and when faced with difficult questions and faced with hard questions, they're not even able to go back to a script.
Well,
that says, this is where we stand as a country. This is where we stand as the governing party. This is our belief, and this is what we are doing to change
it. But that's almost even a step further, because he was asked about the fourth industrial revolution. Mm. Right. Now, this is something which the politicians love to throw around. It's really a description of kind of where we're at in terms of the economy, the development of technology, the internet, what that affords us, what that allows that wasn't allowed before. How it makes opportunities and possibilities outside of the realm of manufacturing or mining or resources, some of the stuff we've been mired in for years. It opens us up to an international market. It opens us up to intellectual property ideas that might become massive businesses.
Well, you were talking earlier about SpaceX and what SpaceX Correct. Have done. I mean, that's what a fourth industrial revolution would do.
But asked about it, David Mabuza had no idea. It was very clear that he had never really had the idea of the fourth industrial revolution explained to him, or he'd never bothered to look it up or try to educate himself on this, because when he was asked about it, he started talking about revolutions. It was almost as if he'd only really read Das Kapital.
And you know, for me, as a professional in the communication space, the thing that I'm always looking out for, and it's basic comms, right? 101. When you are in trouble as an organization, you have a particular script and a particular line that all the executives, anybody that speaks on behalf of the organization. And if I were to look at the ANC as an organization and or as a business, for instance, that's exactly what they should have. So in the presidency, you know, they should be out there with their scripts of these are the 10 talking points
right.
around each one of these things.
I mean, like, for
that
example,
are in our manifesto, and you have got to come back to these 10 things. So whatever the question is, you see it very well, you know, with international politicians. When they ask questions, no matter how difficult the question is, they know how to turn around that question and bring it back to the party line.
Right.
And he just failed to do that. And this is the deputy president of our country. He absolutely failed to communicate saliently what it is that the party and the governing structure stands for around these particular things.
Yeah.
Like, it just, you know, it's like 2 cents politics. It's like Shabin politics to say, yeah, we're growing and we need more electricity, and then we weren't really quite, you know, it's like, what? What?
Yeah.
We're not growing. Our economy is at 0.0001%. You know, so this is not because our economy is growing. It's actually shrunk.
I don't know that maths is really his strong point, but I feel bad for him because he's a compromise guy. He's been brought in because he had a power base. He has a constituency behind him, which helped Cyril into power. And now Cyril sort of got him there, but they don't know what to do with him. And he's got allegations of all kinds of nefarious activity in his background. He's not the guy who should be even answering questions in Parliament. He's really a placeholder.
But even as himself, and I think that for each one of us, the lessons to learn in your career, right? So, yeah, he gets brought in as a compromise guy. But this is his opportunity to take charge,
imagine
to take control.
Imagine if he'd handled every...
And be an impressive candidate.
Please,
be an impressive candidate for his own career. So as a politician looking into his future, obviously he has like designs on becoming the president one day. These are the opportunities for him to take and step up to the plate and make South Africans feel like, hey, you know, maybe we've got it wrong with this guy. Maybe there's something there that we should be looking at deeper. He let himself down. He let us down and he let himself down. And he didn't even give us much comedy at that.
Yeah. Do you want to hear poor old Willies Mtunu, who collapsed during the State of the Province address earlier? Do you want to hear the actual footage and then we can get to your thoughts?
May I pause here to request the leader of government business to continue on my behalf. I have a challenge. Thank you. Thank you, Speaker.
And then he shakes a little bit and he kind of falls. It's almost like he's having a stroke or something. What is going on here? I mean, Pumi, you watched it live, so you know more about what actually happened. Don't laugh, shame. Poor Willies Mkhulu. First of all, is he all right? Do we know he's okay?
Yes, we know he's okay. But, like, shame, you know, the poor guy.
I'm having a challenge.
That's what I thought. I'm watching this thing, and I'm thinking, this guy says, I'm going to request, I have a challenge. I'm watching this, I'm thinking, what is going on? And then he pulls a Wendy Williams, right? Moment of like
he shakes a little bit,
yeah, and which was quite scary to see. And
it looked like he was having a stroke,
and then that's what I thought. Yeah. I also thought that he's having a stroke, but the thing that I could not get over was you can hear a woman in close to where the cameras are, because this was on SABC, so this was an SABC feed, right? And you just hear this woman go, "The devil is a liar," and then starts like launching into prayer, and another person in the background like launching into praying in tongues.
Apparently,
and
she had come straight from Pastor Lukau, Alleluia Ministries, straight to the KZN SOPA.
But you know, and everybody's like rushing up and not quite sure. People don't know. So a whole lot of things come to my mind. And having, you know, worked in organizations where safety is a big thing, right? There's obviously not a safety official here. There's not a person that comes up and says, right, in this type of emergency, like, make the man lie down, loosen his tie. Nobody's loosening his tie. There are people praying. There are people crying. There are people... I'm just like, what is actually going on here? And he had the presence of mind to say, something's not right. I'm just going to step away.
Well, the latest we have is that he was checked out at Grey Hospital in Pietermaritzburg. They didn't detect anything abnormal with his health. He'd continue with his duties, including the debates on the State of the Province address on Thursday. He handed over the speech to MEC Sihle Zikalala to take over. Moments later, as he tried to leave the stage, he stumbled and lost his balance, according to media reports. So, after collapsing, he walked himself to the ambulance and said that he had a drink of water and some fresh air and he felt much better.
What I also thought on social media, obviously there's then a flurry of social media after that, because ENCA puts that thing up. Bloody Julius Malema.
What did he say?
Tweets to say, this is the problem with old people. We have too many old people in government. I thought that was so insensitive, right? It is insensitive. I mean, the man could have died, but it's also, but just to take that political, and this is one of the things that the EFF does incredibly well, right? Is they are able to spot those opportunities and go for them. Yeah. So to put in a quip in there on social media that just says, these people are too old, these people have got to retire, we've got way too many old people in our leadership, put them to pasture, vote for the EFF. This is...
Take the opportunity.
I mean, this is like, it's amazing. This is what you do with your brand, right? You sell it at every opportunity. We love Nando so much because Nando sees an opportunity and they strike.
And, they go for it.
And that's what the guys at the EFF did. This thing was blowing up on social media yesterday. There were so many other things happening.
Yeah,
right?
But this is the one that got people's attention.
Completely blew up on social media and people were like, because it was a while before they told us that he was okay.
Mm.
It did take a while before they told us it was okay. And it's the state of the province. And earlier we'd seen Jacob Zuma arriving with his bodyguards in his jovial manner. And, KwaZulu is an important province. It's an important province for the ANC.
Sure.
And it's an important province in the politics of South Africa because it is so big and the numbers are so large.
And the population there is enormous. Yeah.
Exactly. So this, on an election year, is such an important address because this is the opportunity for the ANC to say, look at what we've done,
If he'd fainted at the opening of a school or something, nobody would have taken any notice. But it's unfortunate for him that his timing was the State of the Province address.
And with everybody watching it.
Yeah.
It's also fascinating for me that these things like State of the Province and all of that have become such big shows.
Yeah.
I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's also a political analyst, and he was saying, it's so strange that the ANC has become this party of grand gestures. You know, they make a big thing. So the opening of parliament and the state of the nation is huge,
it's
pomp.
It's self-aggrandizement, that's what it is.
But why do you do grand gestures? You do grand gestures when you feel like you're on a decline. Like if your boyfriend or your girlfriend is kind of, you know, that relationship is shaky.
That's
the time when you have all of the...
for dinner.
That's the time when you have all the grand gestures. And this, in the middle of a grand gesture, I think it was a very unfortunate thing. But well done to the EFF for taking... I wish they'd tweeted something differently.
Yeah.
But well done for them for taking an opportunity and repositioning themselves as an option.
Well, the ANC's got a lot of challenges, not just poor Willie's. I have a challenge. So here's Phule Mabe, the former ANC spokesperson, saying he stepped aside to allow sexual misconduct allegations to be investigated. He also doesn't want to bring the party into disrepute. So here are his own words, and then we could talk about that.
When I'm done with these processes and I am comfortable that I could be able to discharge my responsibilities without any constraint, I will gladly be going back to the office. Of course, I continue to do what I need to do in the background as part of the Department of Information and Publicity. You'll also know that the responsibility attached to the role of a spokesperson is one that demands one to be out there in the public communicating and conversing views of the organization. It is only fair that when there are allegations that are raised, we allow those allegations, especially the ones that have got such a serious social bearing, like allegations of sexual indecency, sexual harassment. It is important that you give yourself space to attend to those without necessarily throwing the organization into such matters.
All right, so before we get into whether or not there is conduct that is unbecoming of someone like this, whether or not there are serious allegations that need to be investigated, which we know is what the ANC is going to do, I do think we very, very seldom give credit to people for doing the right thing. And even though this is scant praise, because I'm certainly not praising him for doing anything that's more than what is expected, it's a good thing that he and Zizi Kodwa have decided they're going to step aside from their duties, because they realize that that's going to be the only thing that comes up every time they open their mouths to talk about ANC business. So they're removing themselves from it. They're saying we're going to comply with whatever investigations are put into play. And hopefully, for them, hopefully they're found to not be guilty. They're both claiming that these charges are made up, that they've been patsied. But we'll have to see what happens. But I think Pule Mabe making a lot of sense there, actually. He's like, okay, this is what's going to happen. I'm going to step aside. I need to give over these duties to someone else so that I can focus on making sure that I'm exonerated.
I am very impressed with Auntie Jessie.
What because, did she do?
Because, I mean, because she would then...
She was the one who got the letter.
But yes, because she is the person in charge of the business of the party, as it were. And I think that it's a right call to let them step aside. But it's not the first time that we see this happen. I mean, that's what Jacob Zuma did when he was on trial. He also stepped down from his official duties. It's an election year. So it's important that the look, the aesthetics of it all are right. I think
optics,
what this thing...
They call these the optics, right?
Optics. Yeah. But I think that the thing that is going to be fascinating to see is how the law plays out on this one. Mm-hmm. I still wonder why it is that all of these charges, why write to the party?
You should lay a charge.
And not just lay a charge, right? It doesn't matter when it is, but lay a charge. Make it an official thing. Because what is the party going to do? The party is going to protect the party. You know, so, and Pule Mabe, fascinatingly for me, is that Pule Mabe comes out of an internal investigation, having been exonerated. Mm-hmm. From this, when the Zizi Kodwa stuff comes up, what it does show us, though, as well, is it shows us a level of such political immaturity between these guys. Whatever happened, be it, as they say, consensual, be it harassment, be it whatever happened, it is so immature and ill-disciplined of them to ever find themselves
in a situation
caught out
where they have to explain themselves.
Caught out like this. And, you know, this a couple of weeks after listening to Tara talking about being tortured and being given up, you know, in interrogation. It always, one of the things I always think back to is I think back to in the 80s, in the 70s, when people were detained and tortured and all sorts of things. Those people were able to demonstrate a level of discipline where they were able to not give up the locations of hiding of people that were hiding, give up the locations of those people were able to do that. And these guys can't keep their dicks in their pants.
Yeah, that's it's such embarrassing, right? It's amateurish.
It's so immature. It's so immature. And I wonder how much of it has to do with all of this power that they've suddenly got.
But it does make me think of, because I always try to draw parallels between us and whatever else is going on in the rest of the world. And you think about the Stormy Daniels situation, which is now back on the cards because Michael Cohen is busy speaking to Congress. I mean, here's Donald Trump. So he paid for this woman to have sex with him after a golf tournament or something. I mean, that's also messy and amateurish. But he paid her, and he paid her enough to shut up. That was part of the deal. And then she broke the deal by speaking out. And now the problem is that they're asking questions of, well, is that campaign funding? The shutting her up, is it part of campaign finance violation? And this is what will turn out. But it's a different degree of politics. You know, if you're a professional lady of the night, like Stormy Daniels was, she's a porn star and all these, she dances at clubs or whatever. She's, you know, and I'm not going to cast aspersions.
It's her business.
Sure. But the fact is, she got paid to do this and she also got paid to shut up. Mm. And whether you think it's enough money or not enough money, that's between her and Donald. But there was a private transaction that was undertaken there by Michael Cohen, probably on behalf of Donald Trump. Who else? Mm. And then we look at what, you know, someone writes a letter to Jesse here, well, implicating Zizi Kodwa in what sounds like it was a bit of an orgy going on at the Michelangelo.
Well, we were speaking earlier about how it is that women in this country are under attack. What you're also seeing here is you're seeing the weaponizing of violating women, of women's bodies. Because this it's clearly it's political antics. It's clear that it is it's factions fighting against each other, and they're creating, there's going to be scandal. Politicians always have scandal. But what you're seeing here, and which is in the South African context quite scary and worrying for a person like me, is you're seeing the weaponizing of sexual violation. Is it's being used to hurt these men. So these women are being violated twice. Whatever it is that happened
there. I agree
there,
with you.
Right? Whatever it
Very
is that
scary.
Happened there.
Yeah.
Whether it... And again, because at the moment, without having had a thorough investigation and it being tested in court, we don't know. We don't know what happened. But what we do know is that it's being made a weapon against these guys, these women and these women's bodies, and this.
So how do you see
sexual?
How do you see it actually having happened? Because these women have come out long after the fact, right? So they've sat with this story, and it's not as if they've been dealing, and they might have been dealing with some kind of after effect, some feeling of violation, some pain, all of the things that women who are harassed would go through. But they seem to have suddenly had a motivation to bring it to public light.
Yeah.
And you're saying that this could be because someone, probably a man, inside a different faction, wants to embarrass them. And then the women become the tools for that.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, in an environment like ours, where our politicians think they're celebrities, and our politicians are celebrities, they behave like celebrities anywhere else in the world. This is what sports stars and musicians and rock artists behave like, drive fancy cars, guzzle champagne. I mean, when we saw, it's still awful and disgusting every time I think about it. It's like when it's January 8th, whichever city it's in, or when it's the conference, whichever city it's in, it's like the lorries on steroids, and it's all like old men with boobs, right? It's like booze, young girls, crazy music festivals, orgies.
It's horrible.
All of that. In that environment, in that space, there's lots of different things that are shady, that are questionable, and they behave like that to begin with. The problem for me is that it's being used
in this manner.
And therein is the bigger violation of these poor girls.
Because then people will pretend that it's about the girls, and let's stand up for these girls who've been abused and harassed and used. But actually, it's not about them at all.
It's not about
Again,
them at
they're
all.
Again, they're being the object, not the subject.
And if we think about what's the girl last year that was testifying against that pastor and what happened to her.
Just in the Eastern Cape.
For a lot of people, that was the first time that people came across what a rape trial looks like, and what a person and a victim, and how a victim is treated on the stand. And there was lots of outrage. Imagine what's going to happen here, where the stakes are so high. The stakes are power and money. And sure, that's all that politicians care about. This is going to be dirty. It's going to be dirty.
Well, while we're talking about politics and while we're talking about the governing party, Parliament's finance committees have been told cutting spending on government ministries could save around 1 billion rand a year. That's a lot of money. The Fiscal Cliff Study Group under Professor Yanni Rousseau has taken a look at what South Africa's 35 ministries will cost this year. The Ministry of Defence and Military Veterans has been singled out as the most expensive. They're set to spend 138 million. By contrast, the Ministry of Finance will only spend 4.4 million rand this year. Isn't that amazing?
this is where the monies that pay people like your deputy director general of toxic waste.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. What we were talking about, if you want to hear me lose my mind after 6:30 this morning about... And by the way, I also lost my mind 2 weeks ago with Pumi, which I said I would apologize to her for because I wasn't listening to her at all when we spoke about Iran. And we didn't get into what is quite fascinating. I don't know a lot of people who've been to Iran. I should have asked you about Iran. Instead, we got into a tirade. I did. And you were so calm. You didn't give any territory over to me, which I appreciated because I like a good argument. So I'm sorry, Pums. If anyone listens to that podcast from 2 weeks ago, you'll hear what I mean.
And now there's a love fest. But
No, I'm just apologizing. I mean,
thank you. Thank you, Gareth. Sure. Thank you.
Because it was just ridiculous. So if you want to hear me lose my mind a second time today at 6:30, we found out that there's a deputy director general of toxic waste.
But depending, this cutting on government departments, depending on who you ask and on what day of the week, some people, all within the ruling party, say they will be cutting.
Mm.
And other people are saying they will not be cutting and losing of jobs. So depending on what day of the week it is and when you ask, again, not singing from the same song sheet, this party of ours here, this governing party of ours. So we don't really know if there will be cuts.
Well, I wonder if the president is going to rein in the number of cabinet ministers. He obviously won't do that before the election. But maybe if the election goes his way, Cyril will feel empowered to take real changes.
It's not about if he's empowered by the South African public.
By the ANC.
What we have seen in this country is we have seen not one but two presidents get recalled.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So even for Cyril, he knows that he's not. And it's only, 154 votes or so that he was ahead. So even for Cyril, he sits on a very precarious throne.
Speaking of precarious, we'll turn our attentions overseas. We haven't talked about the ugly, thorny issue of Brexit. I think most people have just abdicated themselves from this conversation because nobody knows what the hell's going on, least of all poor Theresa May. God, this poor woman. I mean, what a poisoned chalice to take on the PM job after that mess. So Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, says he will support the Brexit referendum. He says Labour will back another EU referendum after his alternative Brexit plan was again defeated in the Commons. But the Labour leader said he will also continue to push for other available options. There are people who are saying he's very much for the Brexit, but doesn't want to be seen to be responsible for the Brexit. So he's letting the Conservatives take the hit. And John McDonnell says the party will be able to table an amendment for a referendum when a meaningful vote on Theresa May's deal returns to Parliament. It's just such a mess. The PM faced a Brexiteer rebellion after 20 Tory MPs voted against proposals backed by government to delay the UK's departure date if there's a no-deal scenario. Labour's Brexit proposals, which would see the UK join an EU customs union, were defeated by 323 votes to 240, a bigger margin than the last time MPs voted on them. And Corbyn is hugely unpopular in his own party.
You see, the thing about Brexit is it's been going on for so long, and it's been a will it be, will it not be? And the news cycle is short, so we've lost interest.
Yeah, I'm afraid we have.
I think people outside of Britain, you know, this is...
Even people in Britain.
Even people in
Parliament.
Even people who voted for it. We've all lost interest. This thing has taken too long, and it's been such a cliffhanger for so long. We're just like, we can only deal with so much.
Right.
This is the thing about living in such ever-changing times at the pace that we're living in.
Well, I'm very, very happy we got through a burning platform this morning with enough exciting stuff. We even spoke to the mayor of Tswane, and you can go and listen to all of that and more in today's burning platform, which is brought to you by Nando's.
This is CliffCentral.com.